Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Clearly, the Republican Party has rallied around their nominee and former President Donald Trump. But that does not mean there is unity within the party when it comes to policy, particularly foreign policy. Trump was rolled once. Will it happen again? Crosstalking Trump, I'm joined by my guest Larry Johnson in Tampa. He is a managing partner for Berg Associates, a former CIA analyst, and a U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. Also in Florida, we have Tom Luongo. He is the publisher of Gold, Goats, and Guns blog and newsletter. And in Lake Jackson, we cross to Daniel McAdams. He is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let me go to you first in Lake Jackson. I know a lot of things are happening right now, but let's take one issue at a time. The Republican convention in Milwaukee was kind of a love fest. You know, Republicans are not actually known for that, okay? But it seemed to have a good atmosphere. Obviously, there was unity around having Trump as the nominee. But if you look at the speeches, there's a lot of disarray when it comes to foreign policy and what it means America first. I mean, I know it was a big convention hall, but having Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, Tucker Carlson, and J.D. Vance in the same room, kind of odd. Go ahead.
It is odd, and I think, you know, part of the unity, and this is by no means to suggest as conspiracy theory, but part of the unity was brought about by the fact that someone almost killed former President Trump. And I think that, and his response to it, which was a... iconic response. It was an iconic photo, iconic response. It really cemented him in as a tough guy. I mean, it sort of reminds me of Reagan. And of course, we saw a couple of, you know, when right after it happened, there was that reprise of the Reagan speech when the balloon popped and he said, "You missed me." I mean, that's that kind of Reagan magic. And I think that carried through the convention. The problem with America First foreign policy is it's a meaningless term.
Yep.
You know, you have all the neocons coming out of the woodwork now saying, well, what America First means is that we have to deter the rest of the world. We have to project our power. It's a meaningless term. And so the neocons are glomming onto it because that's what neocons do. They'll be whatever you want them to be as long as you hire them. And that's the big danger because Trump is not an ideas guy. He's not a philosophy guy. That's not how he works. He's not a policy guy.
Well, you know, Larry, I mean, the choice of J.D. Vance, while I welcome it, it's not as straightforward as his supporters say. I mean, he's a hawk on China, a hawk on Iran, Taiwan. Obviously, the issue of Ukraine is what he differs from so many of the neocons. What difference will it make for him being vice president? I mean, couldn't just Trump say you're head of the border and that's it, no foreign policy?
Yeah. Well, Vance is a young man with some of the views he espouses. I don't think are really grounded in some let's call it a long time ideological commitment that, you know, he's going out to take over the world. What's taking place right now is the Republican electorate is very, very much against going into foreign wars. A good friend of mine, he was a deputy assistant secretary of state in the counterterrorism bureau, now lives in Iowa, and he's in the Iowa legislature. He went around to a meeting that Chuck Grassley had, one of these town halls. The very first question, and it was not just one, it was multiple. What everybody wanted to know is, quote, why the hell are we spending all this money in Ukraine when we've got needs here?
Yep.
That's where it was. And it's people like Grassley and others that are compromised. They try to say, oh, yeah, but this is helping us build jobs because we've got a factory over in East Iowa that's building 155-millimeter shells. So what I'm saying is there's a separation that's growing between the Republican base, and Trump is still smart enough that despite all of his bombast, and, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to go, you know, punch him in the face if they don't do what we say. When it gets down to actually making the policy decisions, he recognizes it's a loser does it get the United States more aggressively involved in foreign wars?
Yeah, Tom, it's very interesting because the Democrats, again, for the third time, decided not to have a primary. They're just anointing someone. But the Republicans did have a real primary, a real Democratic one. And Larry is absolutely right. The base is very clear what it wants and doesn't want, but we don't have their will necessarily represented within the party and, unfortunately, the people around Trump.
Well, I think that's changing. It's like, let's put it this way. The pick of bands, I think, is interesting because at the very least, we finally have somebody near Trump that's saying, yep, no Ukraine. Let's take some wins. It's like at the end of the day, you can't really ask for everything. And Trump is now talking about, we have no responsibility to Taiwan. And that's an important distinction. Now, can we go for the trifecta and talk about the Middle East as well? Of course not. There are much different real issues for the United States in the Middle East. But let's start there. The bigger, big question now is whether the neocons are on their way out or not. And it was very clear that the donor class for both parties wanted Nikki Haley either Joe Biden or some equivalent substitute that would just continue the existing policy. And then the shooter missed. And now we're in a different world. Trump can do whatever he wants. And, there was no unity from what I saw at the RNC. When I looked at it, I saw the seething hatred from Karl Rove and Lindsey Graham and the rest of them. They were absolutely seething. Yeah. And I looked at that entire RNC and the way it was staged and laid out and everything else. Trump wasn't supposed to be there, folks. Period. He wasn't supposed to be there. It was supposed to be a funeral and the anointment of Nikki Haley. So that we wound up with, I don't know, some terrible situation. Then we get this like weird thing with the Democrats going on as to who's going to be their candidate. And I'm still laying odds that it was supposed to be Hillary versus Haley. That's what I scoped out back in February. And that's what I still think is on the table for 3 weeks in Chicago.
Well, Daniel, how do they move forward? The advantage we have with Trump is that he was president at one time. Okay, so we know the kind of decision-making processes he has or doesn't have. And, but who's going to be in his cabinet? Okay, we can have J.D. Vance, that's great. But Mike Pompeo, head of defense? How is that going to work?
Yeah, and you're seeing the same people come back around, and we'll probably get to this. I don't want to blow the whistle too soon, but even the Ukraine situation, I'm sure all three of you gentlemen saw the proposal put forth by General Kellogg and Fred Flights. It came out a few weeks ago, last month. And this was supposed to be the great achievement of the coming Trump foreign policy team, and the four of us who follow Russia pretty well and Ukraine pretty well understand this DOA completely, because it's an insane, it's not even Minsk light, it's like pre-Minsk, it consists of the US going to Russia and saying, or going to Ukraine and saying, hey, if you sit down at the table and talk peace, we'll give you more weapons, and going to Russia and saying, if you don't sit down and talk peace, we're going to give Ukraine everything we've got. As if we've not been doing that for the last 2.5 years or so. It is absolutely DOA, and the U.S. has wanted to overthrow Putin forever. This is actually, if he bites on this piece of rancid, meat, that actually could take him down. And you know better than I do, Peter, at home, what it would be like if he took a poor copy of the Minsk agreements home and said, hey, we won. This is going to be great.
Yeah, but Larry, after all, we all have to remember that one of Trump's impeachment trials was over Ukraine.
Right. No, and he hasn't forgotten that. What's really fascinating is there's a this Project 2025.
Yep.
Now, Trump has said, divorced himself from it, sort of. But then he said, I wish him well. But the reality is, there are some people involved with that project who were in Trump's administration, who were in personnel issues, and the lessons they learned from the first term was they should have cleaned house. They didn't. They allowed too many neocons, too many of these people with other agendas in, and so they're prepping it. So Trump is actually engaged in some maskarovka right now. What he's doing is he's been disavowing any knowledge. 2025, never heard of it. It's a stupid idea. But if he wins, they're going to hit the ground and they're going to gut the bureaucracy. That is one thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, but Larry, I brought up the Ukraine impeachment issue for a reason. I mean, what's to stop them to impeach him for doing that?
Well, they will not. I think it's unlikely that they're going to have the Democrat majority in either the Senate or the House.
Okay.
If they hang in there, that will be the one safeguard. But at the same time, you know, they
Lindsey Graham would be on board for that. Marco Rubio would be on the board for that.
Lindsey's like a weather vane in a hurricane. Okay, just which way he's getting blown is.
All puns intended there, Larry.
Keep going, Larry.
Yeah, but they've acknowledged. One of the guys involved with the 2025 project acknowledges that. How in the world did they have that Eric Chiamarella running around the NSC? You know, he's so. They do, at least this time around, Trump understands, and he understands some of the corruption with the money that's involved. So, you know, I agree. I think Tom is exactly right. We can, hey, two out of three ain't bad, to quote Meatloaf.
jump in there, Tom. Go ahead. Before we go to the break.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, it's not even just Project 2025. From what I understand, there are two groups. There's the Heritage and Project 2025, and there's AFBI that's also doing the exact same thing, taking resumes, getting ready, figuring out what to do. They're targeting the Office of Management and Budget and a variety of other things. They understand the personnel is policy. And, you know, Trump, the first time around, didn't have a transition staff because no one expected him to win. And so he entered the nest of vipers and didn't have control, didn't have a real majority in the Senate, didn't have, he really was a man on an island. And then the only people he could trust, what they thought, were people like Jared Kushner and his daughter, Ivanka.
We have to go to a break, a hard break here. I just want to know why Nikki Haley was there. Okay, we're going to go to a break, and after that break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. And we're discussing Donald Trump. Okay, Tom, before we went to the break, we were talking about a potential, I guess it would be, human resources policy. You rightfully pointed out that the first Trump administration, they were grossly unprepared. Now they hopefully have learned their lesson. If he were to be elected, and if he were to be inaugurated. Remember, they're two different things, two very important things in our season right now. But Tom, there was the interagency consensus. That's not going to change much, will it? Go ahead, Tom.
Well, it very much could. And I think before the break, you asked me about why Nikki Haley was there. Well, she was sent over to the UN to be terrible, and then she was removed almost immediately. Right. And I think, honestly, Trump sent her there to embarrass her and to put her on an island and then, you know, and to actually kill her political career more than anything else, if you want my honest opinion. I remember watching that and just going, yeah, you're so woefully unprepared. It's not funny. I watched a very interesting video from about a year ago with the couple of kids who were in the Trump administration or now who were explaining what they're planning on doing with Project 2025, and they talked about their wins, and like it was, they're like, oh my god, when is somebody going to stop us from doing this? Like, when is the military going to show up at our office door and tell us to stop, like, getting, you know, because they finally figured out how to do it, the procedurally to get it done, and then they just did it, you know, and they're like, oh, I guess we can do this, and it's like live by the bureaucracy, die by the bureaucracy.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And what I like to call Davos is very good at manipulating the bureaucracy. They do it in the EU, they do it in the British with the civil service, they do it in the United States. And so, you know, once you learn how the rules of the bureaucracy work, you know, the the world could be your oyster.
Yeah, it sounds like communism to me.
That's
exactly what it is. Daniel, will again, if it were to come to pass, Trump is elected, he is inaugurated, will Ukraine be the litmus test for him in foreign policy?
I mean, I think Ukraine is an easy one because that's all on Biden. This is Biden's baby. Yeah, the Republicans voted for the money. More of them voted against the money than on any foreign adventure that I've seen in a while. But this is Biden's baby. So it's a very easy way for him to divorce himself from Biden. He doesn't like Zelensky, even despite their phone call last week. It's an easy win. You're already seeing people pulling away from the Ukraine policy. I mean, Zelensky should have seen the writing on the wall about a half a year ago, and he didn't. He was too addicted to the grift that was coming his way. So, yeah, I think I agree with Tom on this. This is an easy first win for him to pull back. First goes the money. And when the money goes, the war is over. It doesn't matter who you bring to the table.
What do you think about that, Larry? Because, I mean, you know, all of us have noticed that Russiagate, I don't know what iteration is of it now, is rearing its ugly head. It has a lot less effect than it used to, obviously. But, you know, who lost Ukraine? That's going to be said. And there's a lot of neocons on the Republican side that will say that as well. How is Trump going to have to deal with those people?
Yeah, well, here's the problem. Trump is so transactional. He's not guided by any kind of vision, philosophical, ideological. So, for example, yeah, he's going to try to withdraw from Ukraine, but this is the same guy that blew up the INF agreement. So, really, killed nuclear control with respect to intermediate nuclear weapons, and that's going to be back on the table front and center. And what Russia's going to be doing is the kind of thing that sort of touches Trump's hot buttons, where they say, okay, we're going to build these, we're going to create a challenge, and Trump's natural instinct is, well, no, you can't, I can do it better, and he's going to come back at him. Then there's Israel. Trump is emotionally more connected to the Israeli project than Biden, and that's going to be there as something that will tempt him to expand it, because he falls into the, Iran is responsible for what's going on in Palestine.
Yeah.
And so to divorce him from that. So the problem I have with, you know, much better than Biden, but still there is no core philosophical set of values guiding him other than his make America great again.
Yeah, well, right. Tom, I don't understand how backing and funding a genocide in Gaza is America first. It's always been a mystery to me, and I think a disgrace as well. But that's another issue here where, you know, you have not only the interagency consensus, but you have, you know, donor consensus on this as well. I mean, you know, getting past the awful Biden legacy is one thing, but perpetuating it is another, Tom.
No, I agreed, and this is going to be a very difficult. That Israel Gaza is going to be the big issue, right? That Trump is going to have to face, and I'll be honest with you, I expect his opposition to make it his problem, and I'm going to point directly towards my normal villains in this case would be the British. The one thing I did notice is, just to go back to Ukraine, Boris Johnson saying, hey, okay, Zelensky, it's time to give it up. That's a very interesting tell. That tells me that, you know, the traditional British remnant is trying to cozy up to Trump to get into his orbit for the election, after the election. And, you know, as always, you know, always with those people, it's always about, you know, stabbing everybody in the back at the right moment. So I'm watching that angle on this very carefully, and I don't have a good answer as to what's going to happen.
One thing
I can say is that Trump and Netanyahu do not get along, and that Trump absolutely despises Netanyahu, and that's a good sign.
Well, okay, I don't think any of us have the answers. That's why we're doing this program here, because I'm genuinely interested here. Sure. Daniel, you know, one thing that Trump campaigns on, and I think it's a fair thing for him, is that he didn't start any new wars. That's an accomplishment for an American president, okay? But now he's going to inherit, if, again, he's elected and he's inaugurated, two wars. Is he going to be saddled with them? Is it, you know, then what is the power of the presidency if the president can't change American foreign policy?
Exactly. That's the only constitutional role he really has of any substance. Everything else is just window dressing. But, you know, there are two things. The first indication is actually not that bad. And you'll remember a couple of months ago, Trump did an interview with an Israeli newspaper where he said, on the one hand, finish the job. But on the other hand, he said, this is taking too long. It's messy. You guys are looking bad. The whole world is pissed off at you. And that's his instinct. And that he doesn't like the fact that this whole Israeli project of taking over, of ethnic cleansing in Gaza is very much driven by a strange ideology. It's driven by some sort of a religious fervor or something. Trump doesn't like that sort of thing. It doesn't make sense. It's not a winning view. So I think there's a kernel of hope in that. And as Tom said, Netanyahu and Trump hate each other, which is another important thing. So I think there's a kernel there of hope.
Okay, well, you know, Larry, I like the phrase, and it's been quite popular in this program. Why is it every election we have, we end up with John McCain?
Yeah. Because that's where the money is. Follow the money. You know, this is about keep the feeding and care of the military-industrial complex. And all the members of Congress are so compromised by the money. Just the amount of dollars that are required to run for Congress anymore, you know, we're talking $5 to $7 million, and that's cheap. So to do that, hey, you've got to have access to these corporations. They write checks. So a lot of U.S. foreign policy really boils down to that. What's interesting about Trump, though, is I do have a friend, senior guy in the intelligence community, who sat in on certain decisions, like the one where he was being pressured to bomb Syria in the way out of an alleged chemical weapons attack. And Trump's instincts are not to do that. Mm-hmm. And the problem he had the first term was he surrounded himself with people who were almost forcing him to do it. This time around, let's pray that he gets people that will be a little more cautious and say, is this really going to serve our interests?
You know, Tom, in looking at Trump's campaign, you know, he makes a lot of speeches. I thought his speech at the RNC, the first 5 minutes of it were absolutely brilliant. The rest of it was boilerplate. But given what he's said on the stump, has he learned anything?
I think he has. And I think, you know, I think Trump post near-death experience is not the same person. And I think we really have to, I don't know that we've seen that person yet. And I think that that's just normal. And we have to ascribe normal human, you know, I don't know, reactions to even Donald Trump, who's kind of such a larger than life, almost cartoon-like figure. And I hope that it makes him more determined to do the right thing as opposed to scared about doing the right thing. And I'm hoping. But generally speaking, that's the way it works. So I was reading some, you know, So I hate to do mind reading or anything along those lines or even engage in amateur psychology, but that's kind of what I do. So I don't know. Has he learned something? I think so. I think he's learned the depth of the depravity that animates the people that he's
right
in opposition to trying to make America great again. That's the way I read Donald Trump at this point.
How about you,
What that looks like, I have no idea.
Daniel, what do you think? Has Trump learned anything?
Well, the one thing that's more important than that, I think, is that the world has changed significantly since 2016.
That's a good point.
2017, when Trump took office. We have the rise of the global south now, which is a significant, formidable factor. The U.S. cannot project power like it could when Trump took office the first time. That was the last remnants of the old empire. So the world has changed. You want to go to war with China, you're going to lose. You want to take on Iran, you're going to blow up the Middle East, and you're going to lose. We've already lost in Ukraine using all the force of NATO. So the realities on the ground have changed the world significantly since the first time Trump took office.
Well, it's really interesting. We have the world that Trump inherited in 2017 when he was inaugurated, and one that he would have in 2025. The world has changed a lot. You're absolutely right. But I wonder if Donald Trump has been able to absorb that change. And at the end of the day, gentlemen, it'll be key who he surrounds himself with. And that's when we will all reconvene, hopefully before that, and we'll talk about that. We're going to leave it on that point there, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Lake Jackson and in Florida. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.